Okay, let's dive in. We're looking at the Western Cape Infrastructure Strategy 2050 today, the WCIS 2050. It's a really dense document, a big plan for growth, and we want to pull out the key things you really need to grasp.
Exactly. So think of the WCIS 2050 as the, well, the detailed roadmap. You know, if the WCIF 2050, that's the framework, was the high-level vision, this strategy document is where the rubber meets the road.
Right.
It translates those aspirations into concrete strategies across five main areas: social stuff, energy and water, the economy, tech, and crucially, ecological infrastructure.
And it feels like they really need this roadmap now, given the national situation. It sounds pretty grim.
Yeah, South Africa's projected growth this year is just, what, 1%? Barely moving. But the infrastructure side is where it gets, frankly, alarming.
Alarming how?
Well, the 2022 infrastructure report card gave the whole national system a D overall, a D, and water infrastructure specifically, that got a D.
A D minus. Wow. What does that even mean in practice?
It means disaster. It reflects a system where, get this, 40% of all treated water is just lost, leaks, illegal connections, it's just vanishing, 40%.
That's staggering. And that national backdrop must put huge pressure on the Western Cape, right? Even if their own growth is a bit better, like 1.3%.
Oh, absolutely. Huge pressure. They've got rapid population growth, really high youth unemployment still, and then these very specific local
Like
problems.
the construction mafia, I've read about that.
Yeah, exactly. Disrupting projects, demanding payments, plus just widespread vandalism, you know, targeting essential bits of public infrastructure. It's a tough environment.
So this complex mess, the strategy document, does something different.
It has to. It basically says, look, those old school strategic models, your Porter's five forces and whatnot, they're just not enough for this kind of unpredictable world.
Okay.
So the focus shifts. It shifts to building what they call dynamic capabilities.
Dynamic capabilities. Sounds
Absolutely.
like jargon. What does it actually mean?
It can sound like it. But it's really about the core skills an organization needs to actually manage change, not just react to it. Like sensing opportunities, figuring out how to shape them, grabbing them quickly.
And then actually improving things, like assets, while everything's still moving.
Exactly. Being adaptable, basically. Which sounds great, but you asked earlier about implementation.
Yeah, how does a government department used to 5-year plans suddenly become agile and dynamic? That feels like a huge cultural shift.
It is a huge shift, and it's the core challenge. But that thinking, that need for adaptability, it leads to interesting policies, like integrating social value into spending decisions.
Social value. Okay, tell me more. Is that just about getting more bang for your buck, societally speaking?
Pretty much. It's saying when we spend public money, we shouldn't just look at the lowest cost. We need to maximize the positive impact on society.
Right. I heard some frameworks even suggest social value should be like a third of the weighting in procurement decisions.
That's right, some do. And to stop it being just, a tick box thing.
Yeah, avoid greenwashing or social washing.
Exactly. The document tries to make it concrete. It defines social value across three areas: improving places and spaces, think community hubs, parks, supporting community organizations, and boosting connectedness, both physical links and digital access.
So it's measurable impact tied to spending.
Okay. And maybe one of the most fundamental parts of the strategy is how it tackles the environment. It explicitly calls out destructively blind development.
Where economic growth just tramples everything else.
Yes. So the WCIS 2050 says, no, there are four non-negotiable ecological needs. These have to be baked into all planning, period.
And those are.
Water security, obviously critical given the national picture, food security, energy security, and waste treatment and disposal. They see these as absolute foundations.
Like pillars holding everything up. Makes sense.
If one crumbles, the whole system is at risk.
So to make sure those pillars don't crumble, the planning needs to be really solid. They mentioned using specific frameworks.
Yeah, they lean heavily on the theory of change, the TOC, and logic models.
Which are ways to map out how actions lead to results, right?
Exactly. But crucially, they force you to think long term. It's not just about inputs, like buying pipes, that's an activity. It forces you to track outputs, yes, but also outcomes and ultimately long term impact.
So connecting the dots between, say, investing in water pipes today and seeing a measurable drop in poverty or inequality in 20 years.
That's the idea. It builds an accountability. It forces politicians and planners to articulate that whole chain of logic.
Which seems vital if you're aiming for something they call transversal governance or panarchy. That sounds complex.
It just means governing across the silos, breaking down the walls between departments, basically.
Because problems don't stay neatly in one box.
Never. Traditional government struggles because a failure in one area, like, say, transport infrastructure, can't handle freight.
Leads to trucks overwhelming the roads, degrading that infrastructure, a cascading risk.
Precisely. Transversal governance is about seeing and managing those system-wide connections and risks. And I think, you know, for you listening, the real provocative thought here is this. How do you actually take these complex systems thinking tools, these logic models and transversal ideas, and make them work on the ground? How do you cut through the bureaucracy and translate these sophisticated plans into tangible physical results that people can see and feel? That's the billion-dollar question, isn't it?